Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. I'm Kevin Kelton, a writer and a social media political activist living in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Rebecca Kushmider, a social policy advocate and freelance writer from Kensington, Maryland.
I'm DJ McGuire, a cost estimator and a musician from Suffolk, Virginia.
And I'm Greg Matusek, a former political activist and teacher from Cincinnati, Ohio.
And we had a big week in the news, almost too much to get to. But before I turn to the news, something that I wanted to bring up at the top of the show. When I listened to last week's show, I had said at the top, DJ, I'm going to ask you about your music. And I never did. And I felt bad all week about it. So I'm asking now, before I slip again, tell us, please, about why you call yourself a musician every week. Not that you aren't, but I want to hear more about it.
I play bass for the band Dimensional Riffs. We are a nerd rock band. We write and play songs about everything from Harry Potter to Star Trek. And we play various science fiction conventions across the Southeast United States. And we'll be playing at Retro Daddy-O in Williamsburg, Virginia, on the 31st of March from 7 to 9, in case anyone in the area wants to watch us play.
Wow. Do you guys do original music?
Yes, we do original stuff. And a few parodies, but most of our stuff now is original writing.
But getting back to what we do here, which is talk about the news, and what a week it was. I don't even know where to begin. Greg, what did you think of this week?
This was a crazy week. But, you know, we say that about every week, but it's been getting progressively, you know how bad this week was. So every week we look for articles and we look for things to talk about. I actually looked at a Onion article, and this has been such a crazy week. I read this article from The Onion, which is a satire site, and I looked at it for about 10 minutes. I was like, this seems plausible about the Trump administration, and I was getting outraged, and I was like, this could actually happen. It was an article that said Rick Perry apologizes for trying to outdo fellow cabinet member by using $72 million of taxpayer funds on a lampshade. And I read this and I said, sure. Why not? Because this seems about right. And I read it about, and the worst part is I've been going through and I'm pretty sure I've been following it. Someone on my Facebook page is like, I'm outraged too. And I mean, it's awesome. It's an awesomely written thing. And the best part about it is there's a line that says, seeing the Ryan Zinke Coco Bolo stingray leather office door and lavish Moroccan tapestries and blah, blah, blah. It's such a well-written article. And the seventh largest ruby. I was like, oh, this is terrible.
The scary thing is, this is just the kind of administration that you would expect cabinet officials and other appointees to try to outdo each other with ever more garish, drunken headgear.
But the point is, I fell for it for about 10 minutes, and I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. And then it took me a second. I said, oh, it's The Onion. But this is where we've gotten to, where every week I'm like, sure, bring it on. Okay, how bad could we get? $72 million on a lamp? That sounds about right for Rick Perry. You know, Betsy DeVos just totally failing on 60 Minutes. Admitting that, no, I really don't know what I do. Sure, bring it on. Hold my beer. I can do this. I can top that.
And this week's example was Rex Tillerson on Monday being the only high-ranking administration official to say, yes, we believe the Russians really did nerve gas that spy who came in from the cold in Great Britain, and then getting fired by Trump within 24 hours.
Did you guys hear that Tillerson received a call from John Kelly about the firing, and that Tillerson was on the toilet when he took the call?
Yeah, when he was told he was fired. There are two things about that. Okay, first of all, don't take calls when you're on the can. That's not going to end well. There's no possible good ending to answering your phone while you're on the toilet. And two, why the hell would John Kelly even say that? That's just hurtful and cruel, and it tells you a lot about what it's like in the White House these days.
Yeah. By the way, I want to stay on this topic for a second, not being on the toilet, but about John Kelly and Rex Tillerson, because these were two guys that somehow those of us who were on the left side of the political spectrum had somehow during the last 12 months came to think of as our saviors, that they were the adults in the room, that they were the level-headed people that were keeping Trump on the right path. John Kelly is a mean son of a bitch. I don't know how I ever got seduced into thinking he was a good guy. He's not. And I find it fascinating that Rex Tillerson, I thought, was a horrible choice for Secretary of State. Then I heard that he had called Trump a moron and I liked him again. Now I don't know what to think about him.
But the bar is very low in America these days. How did
the world become so topsy-turvy that these guys became my saviors in some way? I don't know.
Well, because they're not Rick Perry and they didn't spend $72 million on a lampshade. Or you don't think they would.
The best example of all of that, and we'll get back to Tillerson, is Jeff Session is like our best friend for not firing.
Right.
Everybody.
I loathed.
Oh, I got a better one. Right. I got a better one for you.
Oh, no, you can't top that
The real supposed rock of stability in this administration, to the extent that there is one, or maybe the pebble, is, in truth, it's Defense Secretary James Mattis. I think just about everyone is
sort of looking.
Yeah, Mad Dog Mattis.
Well, Mad Dog Mattis was also...
He doesn't actually like
Yeah,
that
I know,
name.
But he was also part. He was also exposed this week, or it was... Perhaps we all just noticed this week that he was on the board of directors of the Theranos Corporation.
Yeah, what happened with Theranos this week? I saw their headlines and something about fraud, and I didn't bother to read more because I feel like everything's
I believe their founder, Elizabeth Holmes, was sentenced this week because she had essentially said, we have this great blood testing capability, and it was all complete BS. There were some very high-profile people among her board of directors who are tainted with this stuff now. And that includes Defense Secretary James Mattis, who, whatever we may think of him in Washington.
There are no good guys. No one in Washington is wearing a white hat.
In Wall Street, no one is going to trust James Mattis with anything he says ever again.
Wow. But going back to Tillerson and Pompeo, and I mean, do we think that's a good choice? Or is this person, is Pompeo going to be our new Tillerson? Do we feel ambivalent about him? I'm so confused. Someone hug me.
Greg.
I'm sorry, Rebecca. I need to correct myself. Ms. Holmes didn't, it wasn't a plea bargain or a conviction or sentence. She was charged with criminal behavior this week. My mistake.
Okay. Allegedly.
Stay tuned for more details on the criminal Theranosness. Theranos, it's right up there with Morton Thiokol. Like, it sounds like a supervillain, you know? Like, these corporations that name themselves things that, you know, maybe don't go work there. It's going to end badly.
And if it helps, Theranos Corporation was the name of my college band.
Of course it was.
Greg was in so many bands in high school and college. It's unbelievable.
Every week he tells us about a new one. Play a lot. But going on, how do we feel about Pompeo?
Okay, so here's the deal with Pompeo. He is a Kansas Republican. He was a member of the House before being named director of the CIA. He was on House Intel and some other committees, and he's actually known as being a fairly meticulous guy who's got some wonkish tendencies. He's smart. He asks good questions in hearings. But I believe he might be a batshit conspiracy theorist and believe that the Black Lives Matter is funded by Soros to, you know, kill us all in our sleep or something. I'm not sure. So he was not an ideal choice for CIA director. He's definitely not my first choice for Secretary of State. He's getting the job mainly because he ingratiated himself to Trump. I don't know that he's pro-Kremlin, but I also don't know that he's anti-Kremlin. It seems like he must be if he's getting the job it must be pro-Kremlin, because anybody who's even been a little anti-Kremlin this week has lost their job. So that's we should feel dubious at best about Mike Pompeo is the short answer to that question.
And who's taking Pompeo's spot at the CIA?
Torture lady. Torture lady.
No, she's
well, we're
bad.
Supposed to like her because she's a woman, and liberals are being exposed as anti-feminist because we don't support women who run black sites. That's apparently the line out there right now. Okay, whenever liberals come out against a woman who's conservative, you see these trolls pop up like, "Whoa, you don't like women, huh? Why don't you like Sarah Palin? Why don't you like the torturing CIA lady? You're not a real feminist." I'm like, "Oh no, it's I don't want women because they're women. I want women because they're competent. If a woman sucks, she still sucks."
Like Betsy DeVos. I'm going to bring up Betsy
DeVos. She sucks.
She's so bad. She's so bad. In fact, it's going
Set a timer.
I'm going to bring up how bad Betsy DeVos every 45 seconds.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You could make that another riff, like Kasich is an asshole, Betsy DeVos sucks. And that was my college band.
Yes, that was my college band, by the way.
But before we rename the podcast Greg's Witticisms, it should be noted that there are... We only have about 2 weeks left until Thad Cochran resigns his seat in the United States Senate. That takes effect April 1, which means that there is practically no margin of error for Republicans because their majority is down to one seat, 50 to 49. Two, it means even if they lose a Republican, they can't count on Mike Pence to bail them out, because if they lose a Republican, they would lose the vote in the Senate 50-49. And three, Rand Paul has made it abundantly clear that he is not going to vote to confirm the nominee for CIA director.
You know what? But he said that about some of the other Trump nominees and then promptly voted for
him.
Well,
and that's a possibility, but you also have Senator McCain raising questions about this nomination.
Well, no, I was going to say, but do not count John McCain as a vote because he could be absent for
a moment.
He can't.
Yeah.
He has not been present for months. He's been
understood. But the point I'm making is that as narrow as the GOP majority is, it will be even narrower when Cochran's resignation takes effect in 2 weeks. So we really at this point we can't guarantee that any nomination is certain because of Cochran's absence and admittedly also because of McCain's absence. But that's especially true when it comes to a CIA nominee that has a lot of controversy, as you've noted. Pompeo will probably get through because he's been in Congress and because he has been considered one of the more rational people in the administration as CIA director. So it's more likely that he'll end up as Secretary of State. I'm not so sure that I'm not so sure of the CIA nominee being confirmed. In fact, if I had to bet now, I would bet you wouldn't.
So, getting back to the subject at hand, which is people who have become the darlings of the left, even though they were once our enemies, we have to talk about Andrew McCabe, who was fired some 26 hours before he was supposed to retire, maybe 30 hours, I'm not exactly sure, just to screw him out of his retirement, which he rightfully earned after over 20 years of dedicated service to this country. What do you guys think? Did the administration have sure footing, or was this just an F you to him and a threat to anybody else that tries to cross
Trump? I'm going to jump in on this. First of all, we still don't know why. The Inspector General report still hasn't come out. So they keep saying he did something. He was not forthcoming.
Well, they claim that he was not completely candid in his interview.
And they keep saying they're going to release the report so they will vindicate themselves. And if you saw Marco Rubio on Meet the Press this morning, he even says, look, even if he did all that, you know, fine. Because, you know, Jeff Sessions lied under oath and, you know, in one of his things. Fine, we get it. But Rubio was like, this isn't how we should do things. This is wrong. You don't treat people who do serve the government, serve faithfully, protect people for 20 some odd years, and then wait, tick, 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 tick. Sorry, you're out your pension. You know, thank you for playing. Do not pass go.
Now, let me ask you this. You guys have probably heard the same rumors I've heard. Well, they were rumors are in the Washington Post that at least one congressman has offered to hire him on a temporary basis just so he can qualify for his pension. Now, assuming that that's legal, What do you guys think of that? I mean, it's a workaround. It's obviously...
It should be legal. It should be legal because members of Congress comprise their own businesses, effectively. They don't have to go through... Like, you don't work for the House of Representatives. You work for the office of whomever. So a member of Congress could hire him as an employee. However, House and Senate staff aren't under the federal pension plan. They're under something else, to the best of my understanding. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, but they wouldn't have floated this if it wouldn't have worked. I mean, obviously they looked into this and they think that it's doable.
They floated it based on something Andrea Mitchell tweeted. So
right.
I don't know how realistic.
Well, wait a second. We make foreign policy based on something that Donald Trump tweets. So let's not discount tweets.
The first thing is do not assume that members of Congress are smarter or more knowledgeable than you or anyone else.
When have I ever done that?
The other thing to keep in mind is that McCabe probably has some options and some civil service protections, although not all of them, because the FBI employees don't have all of the civil service protections that, say, someone at the Department of Labor might have. The problem here is that we really, as we've said, we really don't know what the situation here is. What we have heard is we have heard leaks about what the OIG report is going to say about him. We have heard leaks about what the Office of Professional Responsibility has said about him. We've heard leaks about what the FBI recommended. But there hasn't been an official document anywhere, except from Jeff Sessions when he actually fired him. So we don't really know whether McCabe actually lied or whether he just made a mistake or two in the maelstrom of all hell breaking loose around him, which is what he implied happened in his statement after he got fired. So we're going to have to wait for the process, such as it is, to go forward on this until we know one way or the other. But the optics look terrible. It clearly gives the impression that Donald Trump is looking to lash out at his political enemies and create a chilling effect on anyone who wants to investigate him.
It gives that impression? It gives that impression?
Well, right. Without actual evidence, that's what it does. It implies, but it does not actually say it. There's no smoking gun. There's no knife in the back. There's no paper trail.
There's no Russian nerve agent.
Well, no, there is a Russian nerve agent.
There is a Russian. We'll get to
not
that soon.
Yet. You know, just not in the McCabe case.
The worst part about this is this report will probably come out, and this is my prediction. The report will come out in a month or two, several months. It could be 6 months, right before the midterm elections. And people are going to say, wow, he is a dick. You are out to get people. And everybody, while he's out on the campaign trail with all these things, people are going like, I'm not voting Republican. This is going to kill. This is going to make a blue typhoon. And he is going to screw himself with this one. And he's going to say, did I do that? I really can't remember past my last golf game, which I shot fabulously. I'm pretty sure
no,
I shot
really
well.
You know
really
what he's going to
well.
Say?
What?
Do you know why 65 Democrats won you know, more seats than Republicans? Because
fake news.
They're just like me.
Yeah.
No, because they're
yeah,
just
right.
like me.
Yeah, what they said about Conor Lamb, that he was effectively running as a Republican because he once said something mean about Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
Yeah.
Moving on. You know, we could title this entire episode, People Liberals Love to Hate or Hate to Love, because we have another liberal darling that came out this week. Does anybody know who he or she is?
No.
Vanessa Trump is now the darling of liberals for announcing that she is done with hubby Donald Jr. And they have irreconcilable differences. One of them is reasonable and one is an asshole. Why else might this have been? What do you guys think? I mean, we've heard some real deep state stories about what's behind this.
I mean, this divorce is one of two things.
Does it involve flash photography? I think someone. Thank
I'm
you.
Not sure about that. I was going to say that. It's
Kevin
either
gets
the fact that he's a philandering schmuck who's
that's
know hiring
my guess.
Hookers in every city he flies to, and she's sick of it, or The two of them are looking at the subpoenas that Mueller has issued to the Trump Organization, the fact that, you know, he was in up to his neck in the Russian meetings of if it's what you say it is, I love it, all of that. And, you know, if they get divorced, then he can transfer assets to her and the kids, and they won't be seized or frozen by investigators if it turns out that he's, you know, a money laundering criminal who engaged in campaign violations.
Yeah. Now, so here's the thing. I was discussing this this morning with someone who's a friend of the show. I don't understand how that could work, because that would presume that the bulk of their assets were earned through Russian connections, dirty Russian business. Now, I know he said at some point 3 years ago, the Trump family has derived most of its assets or most of its wealth or through Russia or something like that. I'm paraphrasing it. But I just can't believe, as devious as I think these people are, that they would stage a divorce to try to hide or shelter assets on the presumption that Don Jr. is about to be indicted and convicted. But maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't. I think that's a step too far.
It's equally likely that he's a dick and she doesn't want to stay married to him anymore.
Oh, this is no, a guy it's who much shoots, more likely.
Yeah,
it's much more likely.
He shoots elephants, cuts off their tails, and then poses for pictures. This is not a nice man. This is not a person you want to know.
It may not just be Russian money. It may be Saudi money. Remember, wasn't he the one who was like selling stuff, and then all of a sudden these guys were coming and having White House meetings? Wasn't he, you know, doing all this?
That was Jared.
Oh, that was Jared.
Yeah, that was Jared.
I often mistake
those two.
They're both weaselly little assholes.
By the way, talking about weaselly
little assholes, was the name of my college band.
Oh, you beat me to it! I'm so pissed. I literally was just about to say that.
Now, speaking of people that, again, Democrats now are coming to love, Theresa May have landed in that spot this week. DJ, what do you think? Is she going to become a darling of the left for what she did vis-a-vis Russia?
Well, certainly for those of us who are not happy with Vladimir Putin, Theresa May did step up. She fingered Putin's regime for the nerve agent attack on Sergei Skripal. She expelled nearly two dozen Russian diplomats, and she's made it very clear that her government is not going to tolerate this kind of thing anymore. Whether she is a darling of the left depends upon a couple things. One, which left are you talking about? Clearly, the British left is still so enamored with Jeremy Corbyn that they're willing to give Vladimir Putin a pass because Jeremy Corbyn is willing to do so. As for the American left, again, it depends. It really depends on how much they are really willing to kick in on this anti-Putin, anti-Russian regime policy. If it's just something as a proxy for Trump, then it really only goes skin deep. But if they really are genuinely aware and genuinely concerned about what Putinism means for democracy abroad and at home, then yes, they should consider Theresa May an ally.
Yeah. Well, you know, my take on this is that Putin must really be sweating this out, because he barely eked through his election with just a landslide, as opposed to unanimous, which is what he was shooting for.
Yeah, it's, you know, the when you put your leading opponent in prison and therefore disqualify him from running and come up with all real sorts of creative ways to stuff ballot boxes and put Russian flags in front of the observer camera so that no one can actually see what's going on in your polling places. The only real suspense is how many people actually came out and voted, and we may still not know the answer to that question either.
Well, here's hoping Donald Trump is not listening to this and taking notes, DJ, because you just gave him a real primer on how to fuck up an election.
Well, but this isn't the first. Putin isn't the first one in the past several years to do this. I mean, we're seeing Venezuela, we're seeing Russia, we're seeing America. All these. I'm not kidding when I say that. We're seeing.
Yeah, these, neither is these, the ACLU.
I know. We're seeing major countries where large, democracies are, you know, being. It's ridiculous. And yeah, with Russia, and we're making jokes about this, like, well, of course it's happening. And of course it's happening in Venezuela. And of course it's happening in America. Of course it happened. And half the country's like, I don't know if that actually happened. And we have a...
What is your it? What is your it? I think I know, but I want you to be clear for our listeners.
That
what is the it that is happening?
That democracy was subverted. That the scales were pushed over. Our actual voting process was subverted by Russian interference. I mean, I don't think it... Now, the issue is, did the Trump campaign know about it? Was collusion involved? Oh, hells yeah.
Did they know about it? Did they care? Did they like it?
They cheated. I mean, I have like 6-year-old students that I've worked with in the past week who scream like they cheated, not for elections, but when someone cheats, and they know right from wrong. Okay. But somehow from the age of 6 to the age of like 25, they're like, I don't know if it's cheating when someone actually cheats on something.
When somebody undermines an election, is that cheating, or is it just something not cheating?
Everyone, the term, everyone had the ability to cheat. So if everyone had the ability to cheat, is it actually cheating? And if, yes, it is. Yes, it is cheating. There are rules. One vote, one person, one American. Everyone else, stay out. Give me a break, people.
Yeah, and keep not only keep your fingers out of our systems, our voter registration systems, our machinery, stay out of our social media, and moreover, keep your money to yourself. Don't make a donation to the NRA with the understanding that the NRA will launder your money and then donate it to PACs that are for Republican candidates.
Yes, but you're saying that to the you're saying that to Russia, but what we really need to do is tell that to ourselves. We need to pass tougher campaign finance laws.
I'm sorry. The idea... I'm sorry, because that's insane. And it's insane for this reason. First of all, if you're talking about laws that are actually broken, then new laws are not going to fix that. Enforcing the laws that were actually broken are going to fix that. That's number one. Number two, I would like to know where all this rage among Democrats about foreign money getting involved in campaigns. Where was this in 1996 when the Chinese Communist Party, among others, essentially underwrote some chunks of Bill Clinton's reelection campaign and the Democrats' campaigns in 1996. Where was this concern about foreign interference when British press were sending letters from their readers to American voters in Ohio telling them, please, please, please vote for John Kerry, don't vote for George W. Bush? The fact of the matter is, there has always been some sort of foreign interest in our elections because we are the United States of America. The question here is, what was the kind of, was the Russian disinformatia campaign on another level? Clearly it was, because it was, among other things, government yes. sponsored through the Internet Research Association or the Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg, Russia. Number two, did it subvert American election law? It's pretty clear that I would say it did. The evidence, I think, will come out and show that it did. Three, did the Trump administration actively seek out Russia's help? We know they did. We know they tried. We know collusion was attempted. Whether or not collusion was succeeded depends on how you see the evidence. But we know it was attempted. We know it was attempted from that meeting in June of 2016. So the fact of the matter is, that's what puts us on another level. And what also puts it on another level was who actually did it. And that's why it matters who it was. If this was the Telegraph doing this sort of thing, or if this was a French political party doing this sort of thing, we'd cock an eyebrow. We'd take a look at various people who might need to be prosecuted. But we wouldn't exactly be as upset as we are, because Britain and France are our allies. Putinist Russia is not our ally. Putinist Russia and Xi Jinping in Beijing are looking to overthrow the democratic order and replace it globally with their own authoritarian order. That's why this is dangerous. That's why this is problematic. That's why we need to get to the bottom of everything that happened. And that's why we need to make sure that those in the United States who cooperated and collaborated with this are punished accordingly, up to and including, if necessary, the President of the United States. And this is the problem I have with a lot of my fellow Democrats, now that this is my party, is that they seem to think that Russia was okay until it decided that Donald Trump should win the election. Russia was a problem long before it noticed that it could have a hand in our elections. Russia was a problem when it seized Crimea. Russia was a problem when it decided Bashar Assad should kill as many Syrians as it could. Russia was a problem when it decided it was going to sell as many weapons to communist China as it could. Russia has been a problem for many, many years. It didn't start in 2016, and I really hope more Americans would recognize that fact.
Well put.
Okay, two things. One, I agree. No, I agree with DJ's Russian rant completely.
Thank you.
I mean, and that was just a long-winded way of saying everything that I've been saying for the past, 3 weeks.
No, okay? All you've been saying is Kasich sucks. That's all you've been saying.
But the second thing,
Kasich's an asshole. DeVos.
The second thing,
those phrases were college bands of which he was a part.
Oh, you missed it again! DJ's Russian Ranch was a college band that I played in. You guys are killing my bit today. You're killing my bit.
Now, speaking of people who have become darlings of the left, there's actually one entity that has become an enemy of the left in the last 24 to 48 hours, if they hadn't already become so. Facebook.
Don't say that.
Because it seems that Facebook now leaked the data of some 60 million of its users to Cambridge Analytica, which, as you know, is the data mining company that helped the Trump campaign, and specifically Steve Bannon, craft their campaign and whip Hillary Clinton's you-know-what. So what do you guys think? Is Facebook in any hot water? Did they do wrong? I'm still unclear as to exactly how Cambridge Analytica came to own this, or at least have possession of this material, and why it's illegal.
Two things. Facebook was clearly asleep at the switch, at best.
Yes.
That much is patently obvious. The reason this data is a problem is because essentially Facebook has certain data privacy levels, and if you, depending upon your, for example, most of the stuff that's in my profile cannot be seen unless I accept you as a friend on Facebook. And the idea is to sort of keep that sort of thing private and keep it away from, frankly, from data miners. If you end up with a situation where somebody's able to do an end around or some sort of workaround to get that data anyway, that kind of data can be very valuable, particularly if it's in troves of millions, or in this case, tens of millions, because it allows some Cambridge Analytica to then craft messages that might work for particular groups based on what they see on social media. It's an even bigger problem because not only were Analytica part of the Trump campaign in 2016, they were the Trump campaign's digital arm, as you mentioned, but we are also now finding out from reports that they were in conversations with Lukoil, which was a Russian oil company, but Lukoil didn't ask them for data and help about commercial expansion. They asked for help about how to sell political messages to American voters. And that just throws up red flags everywhere, you think. Yeah.
So, and another darling of the left this week, we can't go without saying congratulations to Conor Lamb for whipping his opponents. Rick Saccone for whipping his ass by some 600 votes in a district that by all, right of sensibility, a Republican should have won. Do you think that this is more evidence of the wave to come, or are you, like me, a little nervous about how actually close it was?
I'm a little nervous, but I'm also heartened. We saw this in Pennsylvania. We saw it in Alabama. We saw it in some of the Virginia elections that took place late last year. The DNC, under its current leadership, is doing a very good job of keeping themselves out of the messaging in these special elections. They're really letting the candidate lead and keep it parochial, which I like, because it means that instead of trying to impose a blanket message, they're letting the candidates speak to their potential constituents very directly about, you know, what they know about the district or about the state. And the party's coming in just with kind of get out the vote support and infrastructure support and things like that. And if that's how Tom Perez wants to steer the ship, I say more power to him, because it's a good idea. We should let the candidate meet the constituents where they live, as opposed to trying to hammer in a Democratic message that might not resonate in a particular area. So that if that's going to be a larger strategy, I'm pleased about that. I'm also nervous about all the blue wave predictions, because the last thing we need is Democrats to think, oh, somebody else is taking care of it. I'm just going to sit home on election day. You can't sit home. The only way the blue wave happens is if we're all out there making it happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, this could be awesome. This could be awesome. But if Democrats have a habit of being overconfident, we have a habit of, you know, that we got this. Statistics have already shown, though, that in Republican districts, Democratic support has stayed exactly where it is, but Republican support in Republican districts have gone down 10 points across the board. That was in a NBC survey this morning. So
that's good news. If we show up and they stay home, that's the outcome we want.
That's exactly the outcome
we
want.
Now, we're not talking about suppressing the vote. We're not going to cheat.
No.
We want them to take on the apathy.
But the problem is, and I've said this before, Republicans are consistent voters. They have older voters who vote every time. And Democrats, who tend to go younger, have terrible voting records. So if we can get them to come out, and if it doesn't rain, okay, which it's true. Democrats don't vote in the rain.
I laugh because it's true. That was the name of my college band.
Ah, damn it. I was going to say that one too.
I have to say, having only been a full-fledged Democrat for one election cycle, and that was last year in Virginia, I'm not really sure about the whole rain thing, because I had election day in Virginia last year had some mist, it had some rain, it had a lot of cold. Nothing stopped those people from coming out to vote. My biggest problem was there were at least half a dozen precincts where we nearly ran out of sample ballots, and I was driving all over Suffolk City trying to make sure that everybody had the sample ballots that they needed.
That's kind of a high quality problem there, DJ.
Exactly. I very much appreciated that problem.
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me talk about this real quick. Let me talk about this. I used to talk about this study a lot, and I just found it. There was a study of congressional house races, and it was a big study. It was from 1956 to 2008. It was a Yale and UC Berkeley study. So it was a huge sampling, but pretty much in a nutshell, it said that rain could affect Democratic turnout, and it could change the vote up to 2%. So it could depress the Democratic vote by up to 2%. So that's huge in a close election. So,
did it say anything about Republican turnout?
Yeah, it said Republican turnout is consistent.
Wow.
Well, and it's noted in my state, my very blue state, that Democratic turnout falls off by half in non-presidential years. Like 50% of Democrats stay home. And that's why we have Larry Hogan, who's
common.
Almost as big an asshole as John Kasich, as our governor. So get out the – when Democrats show up, Democrats win. Just ask Connor Lamb. But we got to show up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, while we're congratulating Connor Lamb on being the newest member of Congress, we also want to say our farewell to someone who really was not a household name, but should have been, Rep. Louise Slaughter, who passed away, I think, at the age of 88. Mm-hmm.
88. Louise Slaughter, I'm going to do my tribute here. Louise Slaughter was the representative from my hometown, Rochester, New York, and she was on the first ballot I ever cast in 1992. She'd already been serving in Congress for a couple of terms at that point. And so she has been, a constant of my entire political life. She was, from Kentucky. She had this wonderful accent. She was the chair and the ranking member on the House Committee on Rules, which means she was setting the rules for debate on legislation. And there was really no greater entertainment in Washington than watching her and David Dreyer on the floor when they were facing off against each other as chair and ranking member, whichever was holding whichever role at the time, because they openly hated each other. But, you know, House rules require you be incredibly polite. So is there like, as my esteemed colleague will note, there's, you know, a lot of that through gritted teeth. That was fantastic. But she was chair of the House Arts Caucus. She was a lead author of the Genetic Non-Discrimination Act. She was a champion for women, for education, for the arts, for the sciences, and truly one of the great, great representatives of the United States. And she will be missed. She died after a fall in her home here in Washington, and quite a loss.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, yes. So, Rep. Slaughter, we're thinking of you today. The other person that we're thinking of fondly is Robert Mueller.
Wait, you know, DJ talks about the Republicans in the Senate playing three-dimensional chess. Robert Mueller is playing like sixth-dimensional chess. He is functioning at a higher level. When word came out that he had issued subpoenas to the Trump Organization for business dealings dating back to before Donald Trump entering the race, and it was all based on keyword. It was, you know, he's like, anything that pertains to these keywords, and presented with a list. And that he did it under subpoena. And everyone's like, well, why is it a subpoena? They've been cooperating. I'm like, well, of course it's a subpoena, because they can't not cooperate now. That puts them in contempt if they refuse, because he knows that this is a flashpoint for Trump. This is the red line. Trump didn't want him going into his business dealings prior to 2015. So anything Trump does now looks like retaliation, could put him in contempt, could potentially be, you know, further evidence of obstruction. Like, I think firing McCabe probably becomes obstruction now. You know, all these tweets where he's talking about Robert Mueller being, I don't know, fake news or something, that all starts becoming obstruction. And, you know, everyone was worried about the perjury trap for Trump, you know, showing up to be interviewed by Robert Mueller. I think he's now in the obstruction trap. I think Robert Mueller just did the strongest thing he could do. And pretty much anything Trump does now could be construed as retaliation for Mueller's probe into his business dealings. But I'm not a lawyer, so I could be completely wrong and don't know what obstruction is.
But here's the problem. Caveat. Here's the problem, though. No one's going to charge him with obstruction. Is the DOJ going to charge him with obstruction? No.
Trump?
Yeah. Is Congress?
Oh, no, this is all this. Yes.
Who? Yes. In 2019, they might.
Who?
The democratically controlled Intelligence Committee led by Adam Schiff.
Yes. In the 8 months?
Absolutely.
10 months. The new Congress takes office in January.
It'll be 10 months from now.
Right. The reason there is obviously a multitude of reasons, but one of the reasons that Trump's lawyers keep talking about wrapping up the investigation is they want as much distance between Mueller's findings and the new Democratic Congress. They don't want one to roll into the other, because regardless of what happens, if there's a Democratic Congress, the first thing that's going to happen is people are going to be introducing articles of impeachment.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to reopen these investigations. It's going to be Christmas in the Kelton home. not just because, you know, I always root for Democratic Congresses, but because, as I've said many times on this podcast, it's going to be the spectacle beyond spectacles. It's going to be amazing what we're going to see if you get out to vote. Do your part. And believe me, the politicians will do theirs.
And the other thing we have to remember is that even if Trump fires Mueller or gets Mueller fired or gets the investigation shut or anything like that, there is no reason why a democratically controlled committee on intelligence or the committee even on oversight can simply appoint Mueller, as their lead investigator and restart everything all over again. And that's the thing we have to remember, is that this, as much as Trump wants it to, this stuff won't end if he ever gets around to firing Mueller. And even if he does, for one thing, it simply becomes a standard Department of Justice investigation, which it was before Mueller was hired in the first place. And secondly, Democrats at any point can start their own investigation if they get control of a congressional committee, including having Robert Mueller lead that investigation. So that's always a possibility.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Well, with that, we want to thank our listeners for following us on this rambling yet very fun podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And please do share our link on your timeline on Facebook so your friends can discover us as well. And also remember to join us in our political debate group in Facebook. It's called Open Fire Politics. We're all there between shows, and we'd love to see you there, too. Well, any other college bands that we forgot to mention?
My first band was John Kasich is an Asshole. Did I say that one? the Betsy DeVos sucks, but I'm pretty sure that was a small combo.
Yeah, that was a small combo.
It didn't get very far.
So if we go and share the MPU link on your Facebook timeline, does that mean Cambridge Analytica is going to mine us?
I don't think they'd mine us at all. I think they'd be pretty cool with us. Boom.